Welcome to Women in WP,
a bi-monthly podcast about women who blog, design, develop, and more in the WordPress community.
Hi, welcome to Women in WP. I'm Angela Bowman.
And I'm Tracy Abbs.
Our guest today is Winstina Hughes, joining us from Baltimore, Maryland. Winstina is a WordPress community member, core contributor, and speaker. She works in regional planning for the Maryland Department of Transportation. Welcome, Winstina.
Hello. Thanks for having me, Angela. Thanks for having me, Tracy. How are you doing?
We are so happy to have you. We like to start off each episode asking our guests how they got into WordPress. How did you get started?
How did I get started in WordPress? I got started in WordPress because I had an assignment in college, and the assignment involved adding data that we'd analyzed using GIS, which is Geographic Information Systems, and adding that data into a WordPress.com blog.
And wow.
Yeah, and then based on that, when I graduated from college, I moved home, did that general process that we all do. I graduate from college, move home, and then start, looking for work or to go back to school. And I started a blog on community development for the town that I lived in, and that was on WordPress.com. And so I transitioned from an assignment to something that I, chose to do out of just an interest. And I like to say it all started on WordPress.com.
I love that.
True for a lot of people. Like a passion blog.
Yeah, sure. That's exactly what it was. That's exactly what it was. I walked around town because I had to, the good thing is that, I live in a walkable community. I could walk to anywhere I needed to go and then catch a train or a bus, either into the city or to school to go to Rutgers. And so I could walk everywhere. And so in the process of, walking to school or walking home or walking to, to a restaurant to get something to eat, I would, just really have an opportunity to look at where I lived within the lens of what I'd studied, which was planning and policy. And so I just wrote about it as I walked by.
I love that because I am so passionate about that urban planning, that walkable 1 minute or 1 mile neighborhoods. Is that what they call it? Like when your house, you're just 1 mile from the end of the transportation point to whatever your final destination is. So I'm totally also passionate about the thing that you actually do professionally.
I actually want to know because, with WordPress.com, I've started people off on WordPress.com. How did you find that part of the WordPress?
How did I find the WordPress community?
Mm-hmm.
That is a phenomenal question. Okay, so I started for that college assignment, and then I started with my own personal blog. And then in the process of writing about that blog, the New York Times started with a site called The Local, and that was local news reporting, hyper-local news. And they, somehow or another, I'm not sure, however it is the universe works, I started my blog and then they were launching their site and they came across my blog and they were like, this is what, we want to do and we'd like for you to write for us. And so it was, it was like three communities and mine happens to be one of them. And so that is part of this whole piece of my involvement. And then in the process of writing, I actually was doing more on WordPress than I was previously, So now I was, I did interviews and so I would meet someone and do an interview with them. And I also, went on different locations. I really had an opportunity to go to an urban farm that was started Really like the first of its kind in New Jersey. And so it was in Newark, New Jersey, and I went to interview the owners, the two who'd started. And so this experience was taking me to so many different places that it's only natural, you know, that I would have spent more time, I'm sure, like looking into WordPress. And then in the process of just being immersed in that work that I was doing, I'm sure I, you know, came across something about like meetups. And because of the proximity that I am to New York City, we have like the Midtown Direct, which is something that makes our town a little different. The Midtown Direct is a service that New Jersey Transit, you know, offers. It's a group of communities that you could say like the vast majority of their, a good portion of their residents work in New York City. And so it's an accelerated train service. And because we have, you know, the Midtown Direct, and I could so quickly get into New York City, going to a New York City meetup was not like, it wasn't going to be a challenge for me. So I'm sure like coming across that and then just going into the city, you know, is what took me to an initial meetup. And then here we are.
And here we are.
Wow.
Core contributor, all of these things. New York Times, no big deal.
It took just years.
Writing for big, but I love that story.
It took years for me to contribute to Core. So let's not.
listen, I started on WordPress in 2004. I didn't start contributing until just a couple of years ago, too.
Exactly.
So
yeah, 2006, 2007 is when I started. And so Core was, you know, for like all female, you know, release. And so
I was in that one.
Excuse me.
Exactly.
Yeah, the all women release, because it's, you know, non-binary and also. Yeah, so that's when I started. So there's a breadth of time that I've that I've been in the WordPress.
But it's still a big it's still a big thing to say. Like, you have a part of this, you know, platform that like powers a quarter of the internet. So
it's humbling to have done
very
that.
Much so.
It is, and it's you're right to be. The ability to be able to say that is true. I never thought I would contribute to Core because I thought Core was code. I thought it was all code, and then to learn that there are different elements to it that we can contribute to. I contributed on the documentation team. So, you know, as a writer, to know that I did not know that was the part of a release. And so to find out that that's how I could contribute to it was just like, it floored me, and I'm so happy that I could be a part of that experience.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. So how was your experience on it? Tell me.
The core contributing is so interesting, because there's two pieces to that. Is one is how you found out that you could contribute on that level. So I'm curious, like, how did you find that out? And then the other part is like, what benefit do you feel like you've gained from being part of that experience?
So just after the tweet saying that they were looking for contributors, and I know when they were looking to put together the team, and I saw that. And I know there was also conversation too about the fact that contributing does cause you to spend more time and the financial component of contributing and dedicating that much time to it. And then like, what does someone do when they're putting that much time into contributing to the release? And then, you know, the income that they could be gaining at that time isn't something that they would be able to pursue. Because, you know, opportunity costs, right? Mm-hmm. The opportunity cost of participating on a release means that that's the time that you could be earning an income. And so I saw that there was conversation on that too. And I think what probably, and it was great that that conversation was happening, because it would be great to know if there were companies that stepped in to do, you know, some type of like support, right? Like financial support for you know, women and non-binary who participated in it. But that was an important part of the conversation. And it was great to see that call to action, or the opportunity to join it rather, and the conversations that came out of it. And then, you know, I expressed interest in participating in it, and I had a chance to. I will say though, that something that is super, something that touches me is that I was also part of like, you know, minor releases, like the 5.5 minor release. And I also did documentation for them. And so I want you to know that my heart is with the minor release team.
I love that.
That's great. Your employer did not sponsor you to spend paid hours working on this contribution, you mean?
WordPress is, because it's async, I can contribute.
Yeah.
And so essentially look at, you know, consider there's the traditional like 9-to-5 work.
Yep.
And then WordPress fits in outside of work. So then that, you know, I'm a night owl, so WordPress fits into my evenings and my nights.
Yeah.
Right? I'm not a morning person, so WordPress does not happen before 8 a.m. or 9 a.m. when Stina's contributions do not begin.
I love that.
In the morning. All of Stina's contributions are in the evenings and, you know, at night and quite possibly 1 or 2 a.m. So anything you see out there, y'all.
Yep.
That's when it's happening.
Well, and I think that's an important thing to note, is that because I also, this is one of the reasons why it took me so long to contribute to WordPress, is because I didn't have someone, like I couldn't give up those hours because I was working or I had to, you know, pay a mortgage or whatever it was. And that was big. That's been my big complaint about the WordPress contribution, because also, like you said, isn't core just code? Because that's what's like, you know, what's highlighted as a core contributor. But documentation, writing, accessibility, all of those are crucial. So, I mean, one of the things is like, I think it's amazing that when you have people that I would say, like, I was able to contribute to this small thing. Well, that's a huge thing when you are literally donating those hours and no one is reimbursing you for those. So I think that's a huge thing and a testimony to like, yeah, you can do a little bit and it goes a long way.
You're right. You're right. Contributing that time. Absolutely. And I didn't understand before how we're able to all make the contributions that we do. Because I didn't have a word for async, right? Like conceptually, I know that we do work at different times, right? But I didn't really fully understand that really the WordPress project does run async, because someone who's in Europe, once they're working and we wake up in like the Americas, right? Like we're continuing or doing our portion of that work. And then when we're sleeping, you know, someone, you know, on the, you know, continent of Africa is doing their work, and then, you know, someone in Asia. So it's all happening in the same day, but it's not happening at the same time. That's what's fundamentally important, because I think when we come into it thinking that I'm working on it with you and we both have to be awake at the same time to do this work, then it's like, oh my goodness, how am I going to be able to sync my schedule to do it with this person? I really probably can't do it. When you start to understand that that's not how it works at all, then you can see how you fit into this larger structure, you know, and that helped me to see that that helped me realize that my contribution was possible, because at like 10, 11, 12, 1 a.m., I'd be able to continue on the work that someone had been doing and is now asleep.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that, like, because in the tech industry, I think we just take it for granted. We're like, yeah, we can do things at any time. But, you know, I'm in Milwaukee, and there's still a lot of kind of just old school manufacturing industry, which that concept isn't like asynchronous. What do you mean? Like working remotely? Like, how do you do that? And in most industries, it's a newer thing.
Government jobs don't work async.
Exactly.
Like government, you're in the office, like post, and that was the thing, post COVID, post pandemic, so many industries did not believe that you could work from home, not even work from home productively, right? That you could do your work at home rather than in the office. It was not something that a lot of industries felt was possible. And then the pandemic shifted our world, and we realized, yeah, a computer is a computer in any location. You know, our binders can be in the office or in my living room, right? Like, because you had to work. It's not like the world didn't shut down. Like there was a time, like there was definitely that moment where the world like paused, you know, and then there was a pause and then an analysis, kind of like reshuffling, and then all right, well, you know, we gotta get back to it however best we can. And so many industries, including the one that I'm in, had to continue working in this new reality.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm really curious about, you have some pet projects that you're involved with, like Women of WordPress New York City, also in support inclusion in tech. Can you talk to us about kind of these more personal projects of yours?
Yes. Women of WordPress New York City has my heart. You know, because as a woman, right, in this WordPress space, there are definitely moments where we are in, you know, events, like whether it be meetups or conferences. Actually, this doesn't apply to conferences, but you're at a meetup and you want to ask a question. And this is really where this is where my experience came from, was hosting meetups and then seeing the conversations being dominated by the men. And for, you know, seeing that it took us longer as women to express our thoughts or ask our questions. And by the time we did that, the event was over. So as an organizer, seeing this for, observing this for the, over a course of 1 or 2 years, it struck me, like, you know, you see it, you experience it, and then you file it away. You know, I saw that I was experiencing it and I filed it away. And we had a WordCamp New York City, and that year I was speaking at WordCamp Austin. And a conversation came out of that where folks expressed, women expressed an interest to have an all-woman event series. Like, wouldn't that be great? And so even though I wasn't physically there, I understood what they were discussing in that panel and what they were asking for. And so when I, you know, returned and started organizing meetups, I decided that we would do one event series for the women in New York City. And it did not go over well.
What happened?
It did not go over well when that idea was proposed to have an all-women event series. And the language didn't exist to do that, to have one either. So imagine the language, because for meetups, it's so interesting. Like meetups are, they're an activity, but it's also, I mean, meetup is a site too. And so when we think of meetups, we're organizing events, but they're also located centrally on a site, which is called meetup. And so of course, part of hosting an event is describing it and copy that someone reads that's interesting to them, that that moves them to register, to RSVP, and then moves them to show up, to attend. So there's so much there. And so the copy for this event series had to be thought through well, very well. And in the process of thinking through that and having proposed the idea, there was a lot of pushback. There were, you know, I received pushback from women asking, you know, why do we need to have an all-women space? And I received pushback from men asking, why are men excluded from this?
That is a very interesting thing, because the parallels that we've experienced are very, very similar. And we had the same thing. I remember we were first talking about this. Angela and I met at LoopConf like a million years ago, and we started talking about this. And we were telling some of the other attendees, the other women attendees, which there was like three or seven out of the whole conference. And we had that. Well, you know, I don't really want to be known. I don't want that to be called out. It seems exclusionary. And I was like, but what has actually happened is that remedy of, okay, you're right. The conversation, the people that jump into the conversation very quickly are typically cishet men, right?
I'm gonna say not typically. I've definitely hosted more than 50 meetups, I wanna say. So like for many of them, mm-hmm. the majority have yeah. been cisgender mm-hmm. Male. But, and I am not, this is not a critique to them, because I actually have a series that is traditional in every sense.
Yeah.
So actually, yeah. I have a series that's traditional in every sense. And then I have a co-organizers for this one that's mm-hmm. tailored for women. Mm-hmm. You know, so yeah, go ahead. So
I agree with that. Yeah, you're right,
well,
you're right.
We did get pushback from women.
We got a lot of pushback.
Specifically the women at the conference were saying, I don't want to be a woman in WordPress. I want to be a developer, and I want to be respected as a developer. I don't want it to be that I'm identified as a woman. I just want to be a person. And I think all women ultimately want to be a person and not necessarily identified by their gender. But as we found out and we created the podcast, what we've seen is that, wow, women are having a different experience in different spaces in their WordPress communities. And for example, we've spoken to people like in Brazil, in Bangladesh, in other parts of the world, Mexico, that women are such a minority or not even present in the communities, that having a podcast around women in WP helps to highlight and bring to attention this disparity of the genders, and helps to empower and share those stories that are important. But the people who have been in those communities have said what has shifted the demographics the most is creating these women-only events, so that women can feel a part of a community and kind of bolster them to go be part of a bigger like WordCamp, where they're going to be a minority, but they feel like, wait, I'm part of this other group. I have a place here. And so, yeah.
Also, one of the things we saw is people like, oh, I would never go on a podcast like this because I only do blank. But when we had a space, we were like, no, we're looking for this. And highlight that because we're kind of socially conditioned to not brag about things, and I, you know, minimize ourselves and our accomplishments.
Yeah.
And so that we gave the space and the permission to be like, no, you are amazing. And people have been like, I've never had a space where I felt comfortable to say that.
To share, you know, what I've done. You know, the thing about it is, you're right. I think we are definitely raised to be demure. And we are generally in a society that there's a hesitancy, I think, really to talk about all your accomplishments. You know, but when I started interviewing for jobs, I thought it was really interesting because when you were practicing for an interview and you're reading about the interview experience, there's a part, I think it was sometime in college, I was reading that men, when they interview, they'll totally take credit for the experience. They'll be like, oh yeah, I'm an expert. You know, I've been like, and then you'll ask them how long have they been doing it? And then a woman will be like, oh no, I've just, you know, I kind of have some experience, you know, in this. I'm not really like, if you rank your experience from 1 to 10, like, what would you say? And be like, oh, I'm kind of like a, you know, like maybe a 6 or a 7. And then you'd ask a guy, you know, like, what's your experience? He'd be like 9, 10. And then you would look at the amount of time that they've been doing the work. And the woman who was hesitant to say that she's had all this experience and that she really is an expert, she's spent so much longer. And then you'll have, you know, guys who are like, who rank or rate higher, and they've been working at a less time and, or have less experience. And so it's definitely gender norms.
Yeah.
And our gender norms have molded us into ways where we, as women, are not as comfortable talking about our accomplishments. We downplay them, and we also, you know, don't see our years of experience as making us more experienced professionals, you know? And so, like, I could absolutely say that this applies to me. I'm not, you know, I can absolutely say that does. And that's because I'm aware of, there's self-awareness. Because I'm aware of this, where I have an opportunity to affect change and to implement my understanding, I will do that, and I will use that opportunity. I am not going to sit here and try to change myself. Like, Vincina is not going to sit here and be like, okay, for that next interview, be like, you are an expert. Like, no, because I know, like, when I go into it, I personally am not going to be like, yeah, that's just not me. And but self-aware Vincina, who has an opportunity to affect change and understands that experience, will create a space where other, you know, women have that environment, right, where they can apply what it is they also know, or have an experience, and then as time continues onward, whatever they learned in that experience, they can apply to their future self and future experience. You know, what they say, hindsight is 2020, right? So, like, hindsight, when Stina, looking back, knows all the ways I could have been different and wasn't. And I'm not gonna, like, beat myself up about it, you know, but I absolutely do believe that current Winstina can impart that onward, and then pray that in the process of my doing that, another woman will have my experience and be able to apply it to their current and future selves, and be able to eclipse, you know, that particular challenge or circumstance. And that's all that I can ask for.
Yeah,
well, I mean, exactly. Totally. And that's what I think is really, what I find so impressive about you is that you do that. You're like, okay, these are the things that, you know, I feel like this could have been done better. And you make these spaces, you help out, and you do this to bring people, to bring like the inclusion and diversity into the tech space where it is crucial to have that. So I think that is amazing that you've been able to take that experience and be able to improve other people's lives going forward.
Thank you. Thank you. I definitely reflect. But I am future facing. I do not live in the past. I'm in the present and I live for the future. But I reflect on the past and I do look back and think, you know, how could this have been better? Right. Like I'm better for it. You know, but how could this have been better? And I also strongly believe that just because I went through it doesn't mean that you have to go through it. I am not that, I will never be the parent that says, oh, I didn't have this. Like I didn't have it, you know? So like you figure, absolutely not. I am not, I would never be that parent, never that auntie, never that cousin, you know, never that sister and never that daughter. I'm always challenging and say, just because you had that experience doesn't mean that I have to. And when it comes to, especially like my friends and their children, I'm already thinking about like, wow, like this is what I know, right? Like, so like, what could we introduce to them that without them knowing that it's being introduced, right? That will give them all we know that they will need, you know? Like that is how I choose to look at the world, and I try to experience it. And I love friends with daughters who say no. Love it. I love little girls that say no.
That's awesome.
I love that.
Yeah, this reminds me of our conversation with Lisa Sabin Wilson, and she was talking about how when she was getting her early success, and I think people should listen to this episode because it's quite uptight, you know, topically aligned, that she had her head down doing her thing and it didn't really occur to her to reach out and try to pull other women along with her. And what she was impressed by, kind of the younger generation of women,
they are impressive.
is that these younger women are just like not tolerating what we tolerated. And they're just kind of like, no, this is not correct. And we're going to speak up and we're going to make our voices heard. And we're also going to help all these other people. And you're an example of that person who is like, yeah, no.
That's exactly what it is.
Love it.
You know, so yeah, you totally summed it up. So, you know, that's how I take on, that's definitely how I take on the world. And, you know, especially being, an African child, and being, you know, really nurtured and supported, but then also being, you know, in a family that's, you know, my father has a very strong personality and my mom does too, but definitely more of that like patriarchal, you know, kind of that experience and just like, just growing up like that, I'm aware of that. So I know that in my head, I know that that's what I'm working with. And I know that there are aspects of myself that I have to push because of what shaped me and what's like framed me. And so yeah. I'm not gonna tie this all to Africa because the world that we've lived in, even here in the US, like in the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, like the way women moved in this space was you were seen and not heard, you know, like. And it's not until like, you know, the first generation of women started going into the workforce and started wearing suits. And remember, the suits had shoulder pads as a way of like putting that like that shape and that force out, right, to give them that strength. Like the clothing is what, you know, what we were, the pantsuits and the blazers, like those are what we were using in the workplace in order to assist us, you know. So it's not purely African, you know. I've had friends when I was in graduate school, you know, from China and in South Korea. And even like, you know, I had an Indian roommate when I was in college. Like we've across the board, all cultures, like we all have, you know, there is conservative experiences there, and we're still working and dealing with that. So I'm not going to put it on my, like, on my African up.
But yeah. Your parents are from Sierra Leone, right?
Yes. I'm from there.
And sure. Okay. So you immigrated. So you're first generation, and it's amazing.
I'm not even first generation. That's what's
oh,
like.
That's no, you are, I'm sorry, you're not first generation. You are an immigrant.
No, but it took me a while to realize that.
Because you were a child. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. I thought, yes. Yeah, exactly. And I thought I was first generation. And then I was like looking into it and I'm like, my sister, first generation. Yes.
Yeah. And I know I have lots and lots of friends from West Africa. And so like I 100% know what you're talking about. And that's, I mean, from what they've shared with me, and I've been to West Africa. And so it's like, I went to Ghana. I went to Accra and Kumasi, and
awesome.
It was super cool. It was the first time I'd ever left the country.
And oh, wow. So,
yeah. And you can imagine how amazing that was.
That's awesome. I want to go to Ghana.
Can we do a Women in WP field trip to Ghana? Can we get sponsors for that?
That would be great.
Oh, you want to get sponsors to do that?
That would be great. Yeah, right. Amy's usually the one that does that. If you would like to sponsor the Women in WP podcast to go to Ghana.
So then that's interesting that you say that, because then this pulls in support, inclusion, and tech. And so Women of Word Ethnicity is my first love. Let me also share though that the pushback that I got was not from my male organizers. It was from members of the group. And so we happen to be in a community where we do have like men who champion our efforts. And their voices in a lot of ways out kind of drum out those who challenge our presence and our experience. And so for New York City, Steve Bruner and Kevin Cristiano, both of them really believe in and support that work. And so I have that support system to hold Women of WordPress New York City meetups. And because of that, never would a woman come to a meetup and feel like she can't be in a space that's only for women, because we have men that want that too, because they understand it. And so I actually worked with Cami Chaos at Automatic. She was in the community team then, to come up with language for our meetup page, because something WordPress has to be conscious of too as a community is that it's possible to be sued for the language that we use and the events that we have if they're deemed exclusive. And so we have to create these spaces in ways that we are not exclusive. And so by it being open to non-binary, and also, you know, by looking at framing it in a way that it's an inclusive event series, I think that our male members also came to understand that this isn't actually to exclude you. And because I have a series that's for both, you know, men and women. And I, you know, I talk about my experience and they've come to know me over a period of time. Like, you know, I'm not anti-male. And there's some ways I'm very traditional. And so like, as part of a personality, and then also the culture that I've been raised in as well. And so, you know, I want a place where men also feel comfortable. But I also know, and you kind of point out too, like, and I've had those meetups where the guys will talk like the whole time. And in those meetups, I often have to be like, okay, all right, well, let's let the women, I'm gonna let women ask questions first and then I'm gonna ask questions later. If I don't hear any, you can look at someone's expression and see that they want to say something, but like, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yep.
That's, I'll look, and then that's that, in that moment I'll be like, okay, all right, let's have some of the ladies here ask questions, just kind of being in tune with the audience. And in doing that over time and not doing it in a forceful way, in a way to make men feel uncomfortable, I think it's become clear over time too for them that how we engage in these events and these presentations is in fact different. And because they see that, there's an appreciation that this isn't meant to exclude them. This is simply to nurture the experience that we naturally have.
Yeah.
So support inclusion in tech.
Yes.
Love it. You can't beat that.
We know we're having another conversation right now within our community about inclusion, diversity, and representation. We're looking at really making it so that different ethnicities, cultures, right, and folks from other parts of the world and countries can participate in WordPress programming. There's a lot of conversation about the need to be intentional. We've been intentional for a long time, but now we're realizing that there are other additional steps that we have to take in this intentionality. And so this effort is looking at the financial component. How do our finances impact our involvement? And so our finances do impact our involvement because we'll forego participation, because we cannot afford it, and as women, we take care of our families. There's some women who decide not to work, because they, actually, let's not say that, they don't seek work outside of the home because work within the home is and financial the money that they could receive from work outside of the home does not offset the value of being in the home. And so if you're not bringing in, income, right, this financial income, then that impacts your ability to participate in these events. You could have a partner that is able to handle your living, your lifestyle, and therefore, you have the financial means to be able to participate in these events. And then you could have other women, single women, single mothers, and not just women, but you could have, people from other backgrounds, Black Americans, those of African descent here, I'm an African immigrant in the U.S. And so, we're looking at Hispanic, Americans. We're looking at, West Indians. I mean, Asian Americans, like Native Americans, like just the breadth of all the ethnicities in the U.S. Really lends itself to this conversation. But it's important for us not to be U.S.-centric too.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Our community is the world.
Exactly.
When we think about that too, how can we make it possible for other cultures, other ethnicities, and also those who experience challenges because of their, physical characteristics or because of their anything neurological or anything along those lines, right? Who they choose to love, if when that impacts their ability to earn an income, then this effort seeks to provide them the financial resources to be able to participate.
The goal. It goes down to that thing where everyone has this assumption that everyone's playing from an equal playing field. And then we all have this opportunity to we all have equal opportunity. But when you do have things that are, affecting, like you said, your ability to get a job and are affecting you in that way, it's like you're kind of playing from behind. And those opportunities to connect in community, to do networking with each other in WordCamps or meetups is so, so important to be able to get ahead. You know, you have to have that network, and you need to show, you need to be able to be there in person with people. And so I do think we've had a lot of talks around this podcast, but then also outside of the podcast around making it that helping people financially to get to these things that are so critical. They're, you don't know it until you attend how important it is to be there. I would love to continue this conversation with you in relation to my own meetup in Colorado. We have a very large Hispanic population, and yet we don't have that represented in our meetups and WordCamps. And I've reached out to think, you know, people like the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce and, you know, to try to start that dialogue. It's you know, people are like, what's WordPress? But I think that financial piece is really important, and to continue that conversation is certainly.
You're doing that matters. And yeah, I do think that the financial aspect of it is important. And I will tell you that right now I work in transportation planning, and I love it. I want to tell you, though, I'm a community organizer. I started community organizing around issues of housing equity, and I've done organizing around immigration issues. There's a community development component of it. I took a semester off of graduate school to work on President Obama's campaign, so I've done political organizing. There's an aspect of get out the vote for that, and really just engaging different, you know, different groups that make up, you know, like your constituents that you serve. And so I look at the world through that lens, and I approach a lot of things through that lens, and approaching it, you know, that way is, I think, what lends itself to me taking on, you know, the projects that you mentioned, Tracy, because there is that issue of equity.
Yeah. In all ways. And
I don't think it's equality. Like I think by like junior or senior year of my life, junior or senior year of high school, I started questioning this word called equality.
Right.
And then as time went on, like senior high school, college, I really came to understand the word equity. And I believe it comes down to equity.
Yes.
It's funny that you bring up races, because I have my first blog post on my site is about running a race, and I'm a runner. I'm a runner by, like, I think there's a runner inside of me. I kind of feel like my natural inclination is like running when we think of sports and stuff. And so I ran track, and when I want to exercise, like running is what comes straight to me. And so I actually have something there about running, and we don't all, I remember when I was in high school, there was, you know, we talked about like all being on the track at the same time. Like I remember, like metaphorically in life, and we are not all on the same track at the same time. We don't all, when that gun goes off, we're not all like the first one off that block, right? Because of like life circumstances, and that's life.
That's life. Yes. Life.
You know, what can we do as individuals and as a community to take into account that's life, and look at ways of creating equitable situations and circumstances? And I do love our community, because we're always thinking along the lines of what can we do to create that. Right. Like I don't think there's, because we don't believe, I really don't think there's really this thing about, we all know that programmers have different skills, right? Like no programmer comes into the room. In fact, when someone comes into the room, you're going to have like what, someone who does like JavaScript, PHP, like you're going to have someone who does like does Ruby, or like not every programmer knows every knows the same language. And you could pull like 20 into a room, and chances are among those 20, they're speaking or working with different languages. And so we know that inherently as a community. So I don't think that WordPress is looking, WordPress is not all JavaScript. Every single developer is not a JavaScript developer. We've got folks who do PHP, right? Like, so by nature of the fact that we're already learning another type of language in order to be, to create this software, we know that there are different things we have to do to be able to work together to put out the latest iteration of like a WordPress like version. And because we're already thinking like that, I think we're already thinking about equity and integration. And because of that, we're in a community that is open to creating those types of like bonds and blending and making it, you know, these pieces fit together. And so, you know, this support inclusion in tech is fits into this way that, you know, I think our community is. And I'm really appreciative of the partners that I have. I'm really appreciative that GoDaddy and Adam Warner stepped up. You know, Adam said, you know, he was like, he said yes immediately, you know, and that having a home that quickly just gave me, just settled me and gave me like peace, you know, for it to have a home, let me know that I had the foundation I needed. And so that's been really, really, you know, really, really helpful right off. And then Corey with Post Status, he said yes immediately too. And his wife, like, you know, Lindsay, there's, you know, they said yes. And to have them also, you know, support this effort too as partners makes it like, yeah, I can do this, right? Because okay. having them both gave me that like that foundation to reach out to like other companies and to be able to bring on like other partners, and to have, you know, the four that I do right now, and to you know, to be able to work with Yoast and Master WP, you know, Taco and his team at Yoast, like to have, you know, to be able to work with him and like just their phenomenal like team is just like, it's just great.
Well, it also is a testimony. It's like you're doing the, like if everyone's like yes right away, that it is, you're doing the right thing. It needs to happen, and like people are ready to be like get behind it, and that says a lot.
Yeah, and I'm going to put some notes in our show notes so people can get more information about support inclusion in tech. Thank like you. The link on your blog. And yeah. I think that's just such a great note to end on, because we're at time, and to leave people with that message of the fact that because we know that we can't all be exactly the same in order for WordPress to happen, technically speaking,
yeah,
it's the same that we can't all be the same physically, racially,
ethnically,
or anything. Yeah, you know, we all need that diversity to make this project as dynamic as it can be. So how can people find you online?
How can you find me online? You can find me on winstinahughes.com. That's my site. My Twitter account is I am Winstina. That's my handle. I'm there, just not currently. So,
yeah.
And I've been
okay.
Since like 2011. So, you know, Winstina's here. She's like not, you might not see her or hear from her.
She's there working and working her magic. There.
Reach out.
I love that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks, Tracy. Thank you, Angela. Thanks for working with me on this.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Interested in being on the show? Sign up on our website, womeninwp.com. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram, and join our Facebook group to have conversations with other women in WordPress.